Good afternoon and welcome to another episode in our webinar series. And today we're entering the world of PCI and mostly in the format of a fireside chat, which I'd say is probably my favorite way for us to run these webinars to get some real insights and some thought leadership from our guests. And really, we're doing this to walk through, what's new, what's changed, what's top of mind when it comes to payments compliance. And this follows the recent European PCI community event that was held in Amsterdam. Now, I've normally attended these events to get information straight from the horse's mouth, but couldn't this year. But even for myself, we have the very best next thing, and that is three leaders, and I say legends of the payments compliance world, that's joining me today to share their learnings, share their knowledge and insights related to all the topics that were covered. And obviously, there's quite a broad range of topics at a multi-day event, but we're really going to focus on the ones that matter. But let me get to the introductions of who's joining me today to walk through this. So firstly, we have Martin Petrov. Martin is a senior executive with more than 20 years of technical consulting and leadership experience, with a proven track record of establishing and developing high-performance professional services teams. He's a widely respected information security professional. And importantly, he's been at the forefront of the payment card industry, starting right back with PCI DSS version 1 back in 2005. So, welcome, Martin. Thank you for joining. We're also joined from Alessandro Almafortano, if I've pronounced that perfectly, Alessandro, you can nod either way. And he's our head of payments compliance at Integrity 360. He leads our assessment teams that deliver the PCI standards programs at scale for retail, banking, e-commerce, and many more. He is a PCI QSA and SSF assessor himself, and he's helped many level one merchants and service providers achieve compliance over his time, and continues to do so through his hugely experienced team. His focus spans risk assessment, secure SDLC, pen testing, vulnerability assessment, security architecture, and also governance. So again, Alessandro, thank you very much, and thank you for joining us and welcome to the webinar. And then last but definitely not least, I'd say probably the star of the show here, we have Una Dillon, who is the Regional Director, Europe, for the PCI Security Standards Council. She has 28 years in the payments industry and has held various roles, including payments advisor to financial regulators, policymakers, standards bodies and card schemes, influencing change globally. Advisor on the European Commission Payments Systems Market Expert Group, quite the mouthful there, but is on the board of advisors for EMV Co. And she was chair of the European Payments Council Security, sorry, Card Fraud Prevention Expert Group for several years. And she ran National Debit Card Scheme, Laser Card in Ireland for the duration of its lifetime and has worked for an issuer acquirer in consulting and most recently spent nearly 10 years expanding membership globally for the Merchant Risk Council. So welcome, Una. Hugely varied broad career across payments compliance. So I think between the three of you guys, we've got the cream of the crop, we've got all the information and all of the knowledge that we need to be able to walk us through this. So just before I hand over to our panelists today to lead us through this, I just want to remind everybody that this session is being recorded and will be available on demand for you to watch back and also share with colleagues and others. And lastly, there is a Q&A function that we will be running at the end of this session. So you should have a Q&A feature somewhere on your Zoom bar. Obviously, if you haven't, then, please raise a hand, and we'll look into that. But post your questions in there, and at the end of the session, we'll dive down into each one of those. So let me just clear the screen so that we can all be seen, and we can start really our conversation around the PCI community group, sorry, community event. And Martin, I'm going to hand straight over to yourself to lead off and really introduce the event and what we learned, and really is the entry into our webinar today.
Thank you very much, Rich. I really appreciate it. Good afternoon, everybody, and a very warm welcome to all of you. Let me share first a quick recap of the European Community meeting. This conference was held in the beautiful city of Amsterdam, a place that holds a special meaning for me, actually. I had the opportunity to spend a few years of my life there around the turn of the century. I was learning the culture, understanding the people, and even managed to pick up quite a bit of the language. I love going back. Amsterdam is a city of bridges and canals, structures built for connection and commerce, but they also served the critical security role in the past. And honestly, there's no better symbolism for this year's conference theme than this city itself, because the metaphor of building bridges became the golden thread throughout the entire conference. The central message from Gina Gobain, the PCICC executive director, was clear and powerful. It was strength through unity, partnership, and collaboration. The conference also reflected both the growing maturity and complexity of the payment ecosystem, highlighting the challenges, opportunities, but also laying out the roadmap for the next few years. I'd like to cover the conference by dividing it into two distinct areas. First, the strategic updates and announcements made by the Council itself, its official roadmap and direction setting. And second, the topics that dominated the buzz at the coffee booths, the tech talks, the vendor presentations, and discussion panels. Let me start with the latter, though, the disruptive and hot topics that defined industry conversations. What I call the big three that dominated many of today of the conference's session and those hallway conversations among industry insiders, speakers, and attendees. I'm sure it will come as no surprise that first and foremost was the topic of artificial intelligence. AI was everywhere. It virtually permeated and dominated every presentation. Including that of yours truly, Tech Talk on AI. The consensus was remarkably clear, though. Using AI presents immense governance and security risks, but not using AI guarantees you'll be out-innovated and left behind. It is a profound dual challenge, risky to use and riskier not to. Another interesting topic was post-quantum cryptography. This was a topic that officially, in my opinion, moved from theoretical to practical application. The discussion is no longer if, but when and how. The dominant concern is harvest now, decrypt later, the very real threat of encrypted data being intercepted today, stored, and decrypted by quantum computers within the next 5 to 10 years. And third, once again, was client-side security. This was probably the most immediate hot topic. A significant part of the battleground has moved to the consumer web browser. It is no longer enough to protect cardholder data in transit or at rest on the server side. Organizations now must defend data at the point of input, the very moment the customer enters their details into a payment page. Do any of these topics resonate with you and your organization? The second, but equally important coverage is that of the Council's announcements and updates. Alex and I will explore what we believe are the three most significant updates. First, I'd like to mention here the introduction of a new environmental security standard, ESS, presented by Candice Young, who is a technical product manager at the Council. This is the Council's long-term answer to an industry shift where the PAN is disappearing due to tokenization. It performs a fundamental pivot to ensure the PCI standards remain relevant for the next 5 to 10 years. The second one is the Council's product-led shift, which was presented by Diane Zettler, Head of Product and Technology. The Council is moving from publication to products. And this isn't just a slogan. The Council is treating standards assessor programs and solutions as a single integrated product family, what they call. This represents a new business model that will fundamentally change how the entire industry consumes and interacts with the council. And finally, the council's standards modernization, presented by Jake Marcinko, Senior Technical Manager, is a topic that discussed moving of all standards from static PDFs to a dynamic machine-readable XML format. To many of you, this may sound like a back office update, but it's actually a critical technical enabler that will solve multiple usability issues, allow for automated mapping of PCI controls to other industry or regulatory frameworks, and finally, enable that audit once comply with many standards, a technical reality. This brings me to my closing point and the theme of my tech talk at the event. I call it the three-body problem of European compliance. The name comes from a famous astrophysics problem, and yes, the popular Netflix series where the three celestial bodies interact gravitationally. This is the perfect metaphor for where the European compliance landscape is at today. For years, we primarily managed one body of compliance, PCI DSS, but we are now in a complex gravitational orbit with at least two others, GDPR and the incoming PSD3, to name a few. All three are exerting forces on organizations, and then there's AI as a fourth force, making everything exponentially more complex and unpredictable. In the Netflix series, a group of scientists partners with a detective to confront an existential planetary threat. And similarly, we must partner together to solve this regulatory trilemma, where the colliding orbits of these major frameworks create chaos. The good news is that there is a solution, and there is a way we can ensure stable orbits and predictable outcomes. In closing, that gravitational pull between PCI, EU regulations, and emerging technologies like AI was the challenge that defined the Amsterdam conference, along with the evolution of the council, the standards, and the entire payment ecosystem. And it's where we are here to help you unpack today. Thank you, and let's get into it.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Martin, for kicking us off there. Yeah, a great analogy in terms of three-body problem. Netflix series, I felt, lost its way after the first couple of episodes. But that's not going to be the case here. And I think we're going to constantly see that that entanglement that we're going to have to see through and work our way through. So, John, thank you for that. And Una, I'm just going to come over to you. And I think you're going to walk us through a bit of a presentation.
Absolutely. Thanks, Rich. And thank you very much to Integrity 360 for inviting me to be here. I'm really, really happy to be here. We very much appreciate you doing this recap of the recent community meeting. So for those of you who were not there, hopefully I will get to meet you at some point, and hopefully we'll get to the next European meeting. So I'm already yodeling. I should start with an apology that I have COVID at the moment and a high temperature. So if I start inadvertently yodeling, that's my excuse. I'm not doing it on purpose. So I'm just going to share my screen here. You can maybe holler if you can. I think if I actually press share, it might even work better. Share. Okay. Can you
It's
see my
just loading
screen?
now. There we
Excellent.
go. I think we can all see it.
So as Rich mentioned, I'm Una Dillon. So I'm the new Regional Director Europe for the PCI Council. This is actually my 10th week, and I was very lucky with my timing that we had the North America and the European community meetings right after I started. So I got to meet about 400 of my customers there. So I'm just going to talk a little bit. The guys are going to talk very much about what they heard and saw and learned at the community meeting. I'm just going to talk a little bit about how best to engage the council and how you can get in contact with us and how also you can participate. So just checking the time there. So this is just a brief recap on the PCI Council and when we started. So there were major breaches, data breaches happening around 2006, and our founding members got together at that time to set up the council, and it has very much grown since then. My first involvement with the council was around 2008. It was the very well-known Heartlands data breach happened at the time, and I was talking to issuers and merchants about data security standard. So there was one standard back then with 12 requirements. We obviously have 15 standards now, so a lot has changed over that time. But you can see over the years that we've introduced a lot of different changes. You know, most recently we have regional groups in Brazil and in India. The GEAR was set up, so the GEAR is the Global Executive Assessor Round Table. And actually our hosts here are esteemed members of that particular round table group, and we're very happy to have them there. So that was established in 2018. So you can see a lot has changed, and we've introduced the principal participating organization level. And actually our board of advisors is now 64 companies. So 64 companies really representing global merchants and really all verticals, because we, you know, want the community, we want to hear from the community to understand all of the issues and challenges that you're facing. And the board of advisors ensures that we do get that. So in just, you know, to give you a quick overview of our model in terms of how the council is set up. So we have, you know, we have what we call the PCI community, and that's really made up of, I mean, this, you've just got a few bubbles here, but it's really made up of thousands of people. So if you look at all of the people working in banks and processors, service providers, and developer companies, and with merchants, you know, really anyone that is involved in processing or delivering or accepting payment data, they're really part of the PCI community, effectively. And within that community, we have these various working groups and committees, and they represent the wider group. So we have a lot going on across the globe. So in terms of ways to participate, so we have various types of what we call membership. I guess there are different levels of participation. So you can join as an individual participant. So we have individual, literally one person who might want to get involved in various discussions. So there is an individual participant. Our biggest membership really is the associate participating organization. So this was our only level for quite a while until we introduced the principal participating organization. So associates, or APOs as we call them, they would be the majority of the members of the council. And they're involved in various community meetings and task forces. They also have an opportunity to put themselves forward for the board of advisors. And then the principal participating organizations, they're some of the decision makers around, you know, what we're going to produce to bring to the board of advisors and the executive committee, to actually make decisions on standards. As I mentioned, we have the assessors on the GEAR group. So that is generally the QSAs. So that we really need to hear from the assessors what they're seeing on the ground. So when they're in merchants or they're in solution providers, they're carrying out assessments and audits. It's just hugely important for us to hear, you know, what are they seeing? You know, what do they need the PCI Council to do to make their roles easier and to make audits easier? And so it's a very, very important group. Affiliate members would be the likes of Cap Bancaire or, you know, payment associations around the world who want to get involved with the council, but they're not necessarily part of the decision-making process or producing the standards, but they're you know, close to us in terms of knowing what's going on as it's going on. We have the service provider listing, which is basically if your devices are approved or your services are approved, you can be added to the listing on the website. So if a merchant or a solution provider is looking for a QSA or they're looking for a device provider, all of those are that have been approved by the council are listed on our website. And then you have strategic members. So we have our executive committee, which is made up of the original five, and then our strategic member would include the likes of China UnionPay, for example, who are involved in, you know, a wide area of payments within their, well, it's global obviously, but as they have great input into the standards and actually they're part of the decision-making body on the executive committee. So that's a kind of a general overview. One of the ways to contribute, so some of our members have the opportunity to reply to requests for comments. So this is where either we're introducing a new standard or we're making changes or edits to existing standards. So an RFC, or request for comment, We'll go out. Usually it's around about 30 days to reply to one of these. Again, it's hugely important for us to hear back from our participating organizations on, you know, what they're thinking about, you know, down to the draft, whether it's, you know, we're using the right spelling and grammar, right down to is the technology being discussed correct. So we actually just had an RFC that went out yesterday, and that was the one on the PTS hardware security model and module. And because we're coming up to the Christmas period, we've actually allowed 45 days to reply to that. And one of the most recent requests for comment, we had 6,000 comments in from that. So again, a specific task force gets together, reviews all of those comments, and the comments are taken on board. So if you want to get involved in the standard production and the discussion before they're launched into the ether for use by everybody, you know, if you become a participant in the organization, you can get involved in the request for comments. So that's a list of some of the ones that are coming out over the next 6 months or so. So you'll see those coming out, and you'll see those on our social media as well. So in terms of the various ways to collaborate, again, we have the board of advisors. So as I said, we have 64 companies on there at the moment, and they're really covering all of the verticals. We have generally two people from each company on there, so you're talking about over 120 people. So it's a big meeting. You can imagine that boardroom. We also have the GEAR, so that's the Global Executive Assessor Round Table that I've mentioned, and then the Regional Engagement Board. So we're trying to encourage more people in India, in you know, Asia Pacific, and in Brazil, in LATAM, to engage the council more, and they've become very, very popular. So those are the different ways to participate. In terms of using the website, again, our website was updated quite recently. One of the biggest areas that is very popular is our FAQ section, and I'll actually later I'll put a link to that in the Q&A section. So you can see all of our standards there. So the first tab there has all 15 of our standards, but each standard has its own page. So when you are interested in looking at a particular standard, it has its own page, it has its own guidance documents, and the latest news and insights around those standards are available there. So that's just a quick overview. If you want to get straight to that page, feel free to use the QR code there. I promise you it's a safe QR code, given the nature of all of our business here. So that just gives you, as you can see, there the documents, you've got the intended audience, you've got the people who are involved in the various standards, and we have a whole list of the resources. So it's all very, very easy to navigate. And as I said, those were done up recently in consultation with our participants. The document library literally has anything we've ever produced and that is recent or current. So if you're looking for a particular standard, or if something is out for consultation or for a request for comment, you can go and look at the most recent document there. You can search for a particular topic. So if you're, you know, if you're interested in P2PE or DSS, whatever it might be, you can just search for that document, and all of the relevant current documents will pop up there. So that's a great resource. The frequently asked questions page, as I said, this is probably our most popular. We have quite a lot of questions on there. I think there are more than 2,000 questions. So these are the ones that would come up regularly. Again, you can search for particular topics. Again, the QR code here can bring you straight there. So you can search for different topics. We have dedicated team that provides responses to these particular questions. And these are also useful as a business. If you're a QSA and working with a QSA company, this is a great resource to be able to answer questions for your client as well. The training is very much increasing. We actually recently took on a new director of training, so you'll see a lot more coming down the line where that's concerned. But basically, you know, if you're looking at, you know, working with QSAs or anyone in this particular environment, we provide training and certification for these. They also include CPE credits, so there are quite a few training courses there that you can do. And you know, if you're a business that just wants to know what is PCI all about, we also have PCIP training with a certification, and that's your PCI professional certification. So that gives you an idea of that. So just stay informed. Again, you can subscribe to our PCI blogs. We have blogs, we have news coming out all of the time. There's another QR code there if you want to subscribe to the blog, but you can find that on our website as well. Also, this particular deck will be shared afterwards, so feel free to have a look over that. We also run a podcast, so Coffee with the Council. You might have heard some of those. It won a prize, which we're very proud about that particular award. There is also a sponsor package available for the podcast, but again, it's a great opportunity to hear from our members. We're also on social media, so you probably see us quite a bit on LinkedIn and X and on Instagram there, so you can learn more about what we're doing there. That is my email address. I will be chatting with the guys a little later in this particular session, but if anyone wants to contact me directly, feel free to reach out anytime, so I can't get away from that email address. You'll know where to find me. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Una. Now we move on for I guess my favorite bit where I get to do my best Michael Parkinson impression and interview the guys on all of the key topics. And Alex, I'm going to start with yourself because one of the things that that Martin sort of mentioned was ESS, so the Environmental Security Standard, which I'll put my hands on, completely unaware and really the impact of it. So I guess, Alex, in one line, one sentence, what is it and why does it matter?
Richard, trying to describe in one line, it's the Council PV for protecting only card data and CD that is defined primarily by PAN to securing the world payment environment. So, which is the move needed to keep a payment risk under control as the PAN disappearing behind tokenization and other technique.
Okay, but what's driving this shift towards this method over how we did things previously?
Yeah, if we look at the number from Cadi's presentation, for example, roughly a third of e-commerce payment are tokenized now, and the cloud tokenization service are around 20%. So the PAN is vanishing from many environment, yet we are still assessing compliance focusing on PAN as for today. Beyond that, security responsibility is moving upstream, and it's needed an evolved approach to support risk-based security control for payment environment with no or limited PAN in the scope. So the Council recognizes that the PCI community is really uniquely positioned to build the next framework while keeping baseline control intact.
Okay. And I guess it begs the question, what exactly is ESS, trying to achieve?
We can try to it as a PCI DSS, 3DS, and TSP evolved. So moving from focus on PAN to environmental security. The Council laid out five core goals. So build an environment say, that is security that isn't solely PAN-centric, let me say. Distinguish between simple and complex environment, because a payment processor, for example, and a small merchant should have identical requirements and should have identical costs. Give organization flexibility to deal rigor to risk, basically, and modernize validation documents. And to define clear scope impact when PCI validated solution like tokenization service are used. And it's very critical. They also want to ensure implementation costs align with real security benefit. So bring pragmatic security for modern architecture.
Yeah, and John, just I've got some other questions, but just going off on a slight tangent here. We've probably got some people on the call that are relatively new into the PCI world, and we've thrown the term PAN around a few times. Just very briefly, what do we mean when we're talking about PAN?
Basically, this is the principal number that identify the cardholder of the card that has been issued by the bank. So basically, this is a number that we usually use when we want to do a payment on store or on e-commerce, for example.
Okay, brilliant. And so does ESS start to replace PCI DSS or some of the other standards?
No. It complements them. So ESS sits along PCI 3DS, DSS, and the Token Service Provider program. It's widening the length of the environment, not replacing the foundation, basically. The mission stays the same: enhance global payment account data security, draw standard, and effective implementation.
Okay, and I suppose it's important that we, bring this to, the practical terms, particularly when we start thinking about our customers, so both merchants and the service providers. So, what does it mean to them?
Let me say two things. So the first, yes, recognize that tokenization remove open exposure, but don't eliminate all risks, right? So as for example, even without open, client-side attack in the browser are still possible. And the standard need to address these environmental risks. And the second, if you are using a validated solution, you would be able to get guidance about clear scope reduction, even if need of PCI compliance still exists. So basically, if you still use a validated solution, anyway, you need to be still PCI compliance, and EAS can help in this.
Okay, brilliant. And two questions really. One is, what do organizations need to be doing right now? And then secondly, what are the timelines overall that we need to con be concerned with?
First of all, there is a no need of panic. This is important always to communicate. The new PCI ESS will be introduced gradually. So the key step right now is to stay informed, follow update from the PCI Council, and request guidance from your QSA. In our case, Integrity 360, as before mentioned by Yuna, is part of the PCI GEAR, so Global Executive Assessor Roundtable, which allows us to contribute directly to the evolution of this standard alongside the PCI Council. We can already anticipate that the PCI ESS is designed to strengthen payment security by addressing new attack scenario, especially those targeting environment without open data. So organizations should therefore broaden their risk assessment perspective, identifying emerging threat that may impact their payment channel, even when no open is present. As we are seeing with attack on merchant web page, similar risk can affect tokenization system and service providers, potentially impacting connected entity. The PCI ESS aim to help organization mitigate this risk. It's not just another checklist, but a framework to enhance protection across the entire payment ecosystem. About timeline, this is a multi-year initiative. So the council is in the collaboration phase. This means that the question at this moment are what is the best way to reach this goal? What is the realistic time frame? And what the industry need to prepare? So the timeline will be shaped by the input. So engagement really matters, as Yuna was remembering.
Oh, brilliant. And I suppose, yeah, there's, as you say, there's no need to panic right now, but definitely something about, and obviously we're here to help. Martin, we're just going to change gear ever so slightly, not the global. I've forgotten exactly what the acronym stands for there, so I've tripped myself up. But anyway, and move on to one of the other big announcements that was the council's product-led shift. So what are we talking about when we say product-led shift?
Really, to keep it short, because we are a little bit ahead of time, it's a fundamental change in how the council operates. Basically, they want to move from publications to products. So the standards, the assessor programs, the trainings, the listings, all of those will be organized into kind of common topics. If I can just put very quickly my screen here. This is what
Yeah, we can see that.
we are talking about. So these are the different product families and how things will be organized in them. That's a little bit about it.
Okay. And I guess, what's changed in terms of, how did things work before versus how this, affects things?
Yes, things were a little bit more disjointed. And for example, if you're looking for something to help you validate point-to-point encryption, you'd have to navigate multiple standards, head down the correct assessor program. Everything was fragmented. Now things are organized into seven product families. Again, I'm just going to use very quickly. I hope I will be a little bit more predictive this time. So those would be the product families: data and environment, mobile and software, card, so this is the physical prediction, personalization, key management, point-to-point encryption, and devices. So each family bundles the standard, the qualification programs, the trainings, the listings, and the guidance into one comprehensive stack. Essentially makes things more cohesive.
Okay.
Yeah, and
Brilliant.
if I could jump in there as well, Martin, I guess a big part of the reason to come up with the products as well was to also to for consistency, so we know what's happening with each of the areas, but also to avoid duplication and repetition, because what we were hearing from people was that some of the standards were maybe repeating something, and it was really just to avoid that. So it just makes sense to have them in this product family like this. And also in terms of looking at the path going forward over the next 5 to 10 years, any of the changes, if you're a particular business, some of these products will be more relevant to you than others. So it just made sense. I think people are already finding it easier.
Yeah, deduplicating effort is critically important. It seems like a really good step forward. So what's on the roadmap for this and next year?
The council has published a specific timeline. Just by way of example, the environmental security standard is something that we're talking about coming out next year, as well as a new key management standard, which will be sometime Q2 2026. So, yeah, everything is planned over the next 2 or 3 years.
All right, excellent. Well, Joe, we do want to move on to some of the other topics, but just finally on this piece, because I think it's always great to bring it back to the practicalities. How does this, practically, how does this help our customers?
Well, they get a clear way when they want to implement tokenization, for example. They know how to engage, what is the product family. In this case, it would be data and environment. They will know who the assessors are, who the listed products are, the trainings. It just makes the ecosystem, if I can use one word, more navigable. Many of you will still feel often overwhelmed by the amount of information on the council's website. Now it will be much better organized and structured.
Oh, brilliant. And just move again, moving the conversation on. And Alex, I'm going to come back to you. And briefly, I want us to spend a little bit of time just talking about the sort of standards modernization. So I guess two real questions here is what exactly are we trying to achieve, or the council trying to achieve, when we're talking about standards modernization? And can you reflect that back into what was the problem with the current approach? Oh, I think we might have lost Alessandro there.
It feels like
Yeah, Martin, I don't know if you want to take that that question.
sure, yes. So standards modernization is basically changing how the standards are authored, published, consumed. The goal is to move away from Word and PDF being static to a modern, structured, machine-readable approach using XML.
So sorry, I lose connection for some minutes, I think.
That's all right. Don't worry, you're in safe hands here because Martin's stepped in. And I was just I suppose I asked two questions really. One, what we're trying to achieve through sort of standards modernization, but what we hadn't got down to, Alessandro, is what you see is the problem with the current approach.
In the current approach, there are two big challenges, let me say. First is usability. So current PCI DSS PDFs and the Word file are difficult to navigate. Also, they are not machine readable, so you can easily extract you can't easily extract data from GRC tools or automated compliance systems. The documents are static, not flexible for different needs. Report on compliance are long and complex documents that need robust consistency, and this format do not help and make the process very time consuming.
Okay. Well, you mentioned that's one challenge. You mentioned two big challenges. So I'm going to challenge you for the second challenge.
The second is data loss. For years, PCI reports have been written in Word and converted to PDFs. Every round trip strips metadata, flattered structure, and break version control, making the process inefficient and error prone. And this is the only file format issue. The rock structure itself is under review. We have already seen updates since the initial PCI DSS rock version 4.0, and we are actively discussing further change to simplify this and streamline documentation of evidence and security control.
Brilliant. Well, there's a few problems there, but I always think, Joe, we don't have problems, we have solutions only. So what is the solution to this?
Yeah, the solution now is XML as the source format. Instead of authoring in Word, the council is moving to XML-based with the semantic tagging. From a single XML source, we can generate multiple output format, like, for example, PDF, HTML, JSON, EPUB, without losing fidelity. Each output is tailored to its own use, basically.
Yeah, and I think that's, I guess, sort of to catch up with, with other approaches, across, any standard, approach, using things like XML, using JSON to represent data, obviously makes it far more workable, usable, and you know, cross-platform. What's the word? Compatible is the word I was going for there. So, Martin, you said at the very start that the community event was dominated by AI. I think I've said it many times before as I've attended security conferences, and you could have been fooled into thinking you're at an AI conference because it's extremely topical. So we won't let an opportunity go past without mentioning AI, as it is everywhere. And, as you said, it was everywhere at the Amsterdam conference. So, importantly, including your tech talk on the three-body problem. So what was your main takeaway on how the industry is approaching artificial intelligence?
So first of all, keep me in check because we'll run out of time. I'm so passionate about this. But look, using AI introduces governance risks, but at the same time, not using it is also a problem because you will be out-innovated and left behind. So we have dual pressure. It is risky to use, but it's also risky not to use. And it wasn't just another technology topic. It was represented the defining tension between the payment ecosystem, innovation and technology, and regulation. So that's kind of how I would define it. And one more thought on this is, I asked the tech talk, has anybody recently acquired a solution for their business that didn't include the word AI or the description of AI? I mean, if you don't have anything that talks about or deals with AI in today's products, services, and solutions, you probably are doing something wrong. So very, very interesting.
Yeah, or you're not aware that actually it's all embedded, as it is absolutely everywhere. And you kind of framed it in your talk, particularly the EU compliance landscape, as that three-body problem. And you mentioned it at the very start. And so just briefly, walk us through that analogy and particularly how it applies here.
Look, I mean, as I said, I got inspiration from the Netflix series. But basically, it is a very difficult astrophysics problem to predict things when you have three bodies that exert gravitational forces on each other. And that's how we are in Europe today. And like literally yesterday, I heard this very funny, a little bit depressing comment. Somebody from the US was commenting, EU wants to lead in AI, but what they really mean is they want to lead in AI regulation. Which was kind of, okay, is that how we are seeing? But look, in Europe, for many years, primarily we managed PCI DSS. And then came GDPR. Now we have an incoming PSD3. And without going into detail, all of those touch in one way or another artificial intelligence. You basically, again, without going into details, even PSD3 talks in such terms that if you don't use machine learning or AI, you'd probably not be very successful business. So it kind of creates a really difficult problem to solve to satisfy simultaneously all of those different frameworks.
Yeah, and that's obviously with the backdrop of the EU's AI Act that you kind of mentioned there. And actually, I think it's probably leading on AI and the safe use of AI, which I think is an important point there.
And if I could just mention as well, Rich, that we had a blog in August just recently on AI, and we've issued an AI guidance note, which is available on our website. I'll share a link with everyone if we can. I don't know if we can share that with attendees directly to that. But it's a really, really good guidance note. We've had a lot of really good feedback on it, but that's there if anyone wants to learn a bit more about what was covered at the event and so on.
Brilliant.
It is.
I think
I fully concur on this one. It actually. Even though it's just a blog article, it laid out some fundamental ways to treat or deal with AI. So it used expressions such as what you must, what you should not, and what you should. Very, very interesting, very informative. And maybe just one thing on this topic is that basically one of the things that really changed is that if you have an AI system in your cardholder data environment, you need to treat it as a malicious insider and respectively adjust all of your risk assessment and threat modeling and all of those kind of things that are very, very relevant to that. So it was quite informative and quite revealing, I must say.
Yeah. And I mean, that is interesting. I think we could probably spend another webinar over again talking about it. So I'm going to leave that just to whet people's appetite, and obviously we can follow up separately. We are getting close to the hour. We don't like to run beyond that, and we want to save some time for Q&A. So I'm just going to jump into what is definitely my favorite topic at the moment, and that is post-quantum cryptography, obviously post-quantum computing. So, Martin, I'll start with you, start with yourself. You talked about it as being one of those big three disruptive topics at the community event. And the first question, is this really urgent? Is it just headline noise that's getting attention at conferences? Is it just the next AI buzzword that we're going to spend our time talking about? And I've got my own view on this, so I'll let you go first.
Sure. No, it absolutely is urgent because even though quantum computers are not breaking commercial encryption, at least that we know of, because you have state actors and governments and so on, the real risk comes from the so-called harvest now and decrypt later. So sophisticated attackers can be capturing encrypted traffic today to decrypt it in the future when quantum computing becomes commercially available. And that's kind of the roadmap that was discussed both by industry insiders as well as the council itself.
Yeah, and just I suppose just to add a little bit of flavor there. Well, we did a whole webinar with one of our customers and a bit of a who has a bit of a passion for post-quantum cryptography and quantum computing. But yeah, obviously that challenge really is the ability to break using Shor's algorithm to break RSA encryption, and that obviously underpins the internet, underpins the transmission of payment card information. So we can really start to understand that if we can no longer trust that, what does that mean for all of our payments? If we can't, we're not confident in the confidentiality of that information, but importantly, the integrity of that information as well. And as you say, it's not really theoretical anymore, Martin, because although you're right to say commercial encryption, although I will point out that the patent has long expired on RSA, so it's not, I wouldn't describe it as commercial anymore in any way, shape, or form. But we are already seeing that in lab environments, we're starting to break RSA using quantum computing. Only 22 bits the last time that I checked in on it, which I think you can do in an Excel in an afternoon. So not brown break break not groundbreaking, but we can see that actually that is going to ramp up over time. We've only got to look at AI and how quickly that went from nothing to dominating our lives and a commodity product on dedicated hardware, and we can see that same trend happening all over again. So I think it is something that we need to be worried about. And I'm just going to press you, John Martin. Wait, sorry, Una, I see you've come off mute there if you want to just chime in there.
Yeah, I just keep sending people to our website. We also issued another paper, a guidance paper on cryptography in just in August as well. So that's also available on our website. So again, and we have special interest groups that come together to talk about specific topics, and AI and cryptography are both very much top of mind at the moment. So yeah, if people want to have a look at that guidance note again, it's very, very helpful, and it's produced in conjunction with those special interest groups.
And is that a real concern? Una, is that why it's starting to get more top of mind that it's on the horizon?
Absolutely, yeah. I think quantum computing is very much. I heard it mentioned a lot at the community meeting in Amsterdam, and had to do a bit of study. To it's been a while since I've done anything in that field. So it's very much what people are looking at. Unfortunately, what we have available to us, the criminals have available to them as well, and they don't have to, comply with rules or standards or regulation. They just, go ahead, whatever university they learn everything. So they're usually, a few steps ahead of the rest of us. So, knowing what the weaknesses are, knowing what, might be out there is really the first step, towards securing your payments. And that's the kind of thing we're trying to get out there.
Yeah, indeed. And there's a huge cost of change associated with it, which I think if we look at the timelines, I don't know what your views are, Martin, in terms of timelines of when we expect the Q day to arrive. But acting well after the horse as closing the gate well after the horse has bolted is going to be put organizations and particularly payment card information in peril.
Look, I mean, I'll keep this short, but nobody knows exactly. But I believe that it's in 5 to 10 years, probably five. And I don't want to emphasize one thing. It's not an algorithm swap. It's a complete operational transformation. And it's you can't be treating it like a flipping a switch and moving from classical to quantum resistant. It's a multi-year transition. You probably will need to run things in parallel for a little while. Also, because of compatibility with legacy equipment and other partners and clients that you work out there. So it's final word is start now, or you'll be spending a lot of time and energy when it might be almost too late.
Indeed. So I think that kind of brings us nicely. Oh, if I'm trying to actually share my screen properly, there we go. On to our Q&A. There have been some questions come in that we have answered as we're going. And I'll recap on some of those very quickly. So the first one that I've got here is, where is the next community event, which is obviously very topical. And I see Una, you've replied to that saying actually the next one. Is actually this year in Asia Pacific, in Bangkok. So a nice sunny destination. Get yourself to that. But how about next year's conference? Is that decided where we're going?
Yeah, so next we're going to be in Vancouver for the North America one, so that's likely going to be around early October, and then we're in Edinburgh. It's probably going to be a bit chilly in Edinburgh, but I know a lot of our staff are looking forward to trying the haggis there. So, and Asia Pacific, I think we have to announce that yet, but again, it'll be a similar timeline. One thing to say is that over the last couple of years, we have changed those community meetings to allow anyone to join. So you don't actually need to be a participant in the PCI Council to join those meetings. But as participants, there actually is as part of the fee that you pay to be a participant, you get free tickets for those events. So it can be very cost effective to be a participant and get your free tickets for those events. But anyone can join those community meetings, and we advertise those quite a bit in social media and directly. So anyone can join those. We had, I think, 1,200 people at the North America one in Texas this year, and 350 people joined online. So we're also able to deliver the presentations and decks and so online. I think we had 630 at the Amsterdam one. We were hoping to get 600, so it was a really good number. And then again, we had a couple of hundred people online listening to those. So there are two options if you can't if you don't have the travel budget, you can join online to see those. But yeah, look, just again, we have an events section on our website. I think a link to our website is going to go out with the update from this particular webinar, but on there is an events page, and you'll be able to see the dates coming up as they're confirmed.
Thanks, Gina. So, like yourself, I'm also under the weather. Although I think you win
going
with
around.
COVID, I've got a mild cold that just got the better of me there. So, we are very close to time. The other questions I see with Alessandro's answered a couple of those. And what we'll do is we will follow up after this with any further questions. I see we've got one on post quantum computing and cryptography. Joe, I might answer that very quickly now. Is it only large enterprises, well, that need to worry about it? Excuse me, I should probably give up in a second. Yes and no. I think it's going to affect everybody. It's really, you know, your exposure and risk will just be greater the larger the enterprise of what's on the line. But actually, it's going to affect all of us overall. So I'm going to say,
just to add, maybe for a small organization.
Sorry, Alessandro, I was trying to mute myself there, but I managed to mute you twice. It's all falling apart.
So just to add that for a small organization, also sometimes it's matter also to speak with your service provider, because maybe the solution is in your service provider hands, because this thing sits also in a big organization side, because generally small merchants or small organization use their services. So it's also important maybe to just inquire your service provider and understand what is their plan, basically.
All right, brilliant. Thank you very much. So for all the coughing, spluttering and yodeling from across, as you can tell that we are real and not AI. I'm just going to say thank you very much to my panelists today. So Martin, Alessandro and Una. And also thank you very much to everybody that has joined. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.